know.
Good afternoon, good evening.
Good evening.
Did you enjoy the class this morning?
Yes, I did. I think it's going to
Me
help
too.
us with our Zohar tomorrow.
Zohar tomorrow.
Yeah, the 6:30 class. I don't know, something popped out of me that made me think that.
Oh, okay.
On the
All right.
Noah
That may
portion.
very well be. I'm Noah. Yeah. I don't think in terms of that's a Zohar class, but it is.
Right. Well, I'd looked
It's
up the name of
a
that
good
town,
Zohar.
and so I kind of skimmed to see if I would see it mentioned again. And I guess I must have saw something that made me think of today's class. So.
Yeah, I understand. Sometimes trust your intuition. It'll be there somewhere.
Well, I couldn't find the name of the town anywhere, but I did the gematria and noticed a few things. So tomorrow we can talk about that then.
Okay. Give me a chance. What was the gematria? Because I didn't do it yet.
Oh, let's see. I'd have to see where one word. Well, I took the bet off, being it was. I don't see my paper. I'm not sure where I put it. One was 441, and the other word was 119, I believe.
Okay. The 119 I can explain, and the 441 I can explain. So, when
All right.
we'll take a look at it tomorrow.
Okay. And being the bet was a preposition or a, it could come off for what it meant. But anyway, I don't know where my paper is now. I did that before I went to for the procedure, and I'm still not. I don't think I'm over the anesthetic because I keep wanting to sleep.
No, it's not that it's the anesthetic because that wears off. What it is your body needs the sleep to heal.
Okay.
Essentially, it's been invaded, so it needs. I thought we were going to have another person on the call
Okay.
from, but so far we don't.
Okay.
Know it's always been Malka, but I thought we would have a third. Somebody said they were going to come.
Well, today was basically Deli Day at the synagogue, so there may be, I didn't go because I didn't, but Tony did. He just got back, so it could be that she's in traffic or something. If she went, to help make the sandwiches.
Right. I understand.
They're repairing two of our bridges, the two that head west, and so it's just creating a big, big traffic problem.
There's somebody just came on. Okay, so we can begin. The handout is available on the Revealed Wisdom Matrix. It's on row 11, the second column from the left, Advanced Reincarnation. when that opens up, scroll down to, I believe it's class 46. And it's the first handout under that. It's handout number 25, chapter 16, section 2. And that's where we will start. And I will start with Oshem Yehud. The title of the section is Completing the Orchard. Oshem Yehud could shabri thu ishkinte bid hilu urchimu urchilu urchilu urchimu. Yapta l'shem yudhei b'vavhei, b'yichuda shalim b'shem kol Yisrael. Limud Torah mitzvah, la'asok Torah mitzvah. V'yihi Noam Adonai Eloheinu aleinu ma'asei yadeinu kunenei aleinu ma'asei yadeinu kunenehu. If there are mitzvahs that a person is able to fulfill, and the opportunity arises to do so, and he does not fulfill them, or if he has the ability to bring them about and yet does not, then he will have to reincarnate until he completes them. As an unwritten commentary, this actually applies to each day. As an example, someone who has lays to fill in infrequently, they will need to reincarnate. The frame is a day, but a day is part of a week. So it's unclear to me whether each day has to be done or the mitzvah that you can do needs to be done each week. That it's safer to do it each day. But if somebody were to have skipped a day or a week, they would need to reincarnate or at least become an ibur with someone else so that they could lay the tefillin on that particular day of their of that person's life, which makes up for the day that they missed in their life. This is my opinion. Continuing to read. Take an opportunity to do something good when it presents itself. This is the message. It is therefore very important to take an opportunity to do good deeds when it presents itself. It could save having to go through a whole other lifetime. And I am adding, this applies to doing a negative mitzvah as well. If you avoid doing it, you may save yourself from a whole reincarnated lifetime. Also, there are some mitzvot that need to be done week by week or day by day. Lighting Shabbat candles and laying tefillin are examples. If someone misses lighting Shabbat on the 1211th week of their life, they will need to become an ibur and light the Shabbat candles on that week of a borrowed body. However, regarding mitzvahs he cannot perform without Hashem creating the necessary circumstances, such as redeeming the firstborn son, or yibum, or chalitza, divorce, and similar mitzvot, it will depend. For example, if Hashem did create the necessary circumstances to fulfill any of them, and he did not fulfill that particular mitzvah, then he will have to reincarnate to fulfill whichever one he could have fulfilled but did not. However, if the occasion did not arise to fulfill them, then he will not have to reincarnate to perform them. But rather, he will only come back the Sodibur into a person who is undergoing that particular mitzvah and fulfill his obligation that way. Once the mitzvah has been completed, then he will return to his place. Then there is a third level, which is the mitzvahs which cannot be performed today, such as sacrifices. Yet we have stated that every person must fulfill all 613 mitzvahs and reincarnate until he does so. Thus, at this time, he would not have to reincarnate for their sake, since they cannot be performed. However, after Mashiach arrives and the temple is rebuilt, may it be so speedily in our days, he will reincarnate in order to perform those particular mitzvahs. Rabbi Yishmael, the son of Elisha, the high priest, hinted to this when, after tilting the lamp on Shabbat night, he said, "I will have to record this in my ledger, for when the temple returns, so that I will then bring a substantial sin offering." I am adding, are you recording things for which you will need to bring a sin or a guilt offering? He accidentally did a type of lighting fire, which is forbidden on Shabbat. Why did he record something in order to do something that could not be done? It must be that he knew that even if the temple would not end up being rebuilt in his days, as it wasn't, then he would someday be able to bring the sacrifice in a reincarnation. I would also, as an unwritten commentary, mention perhaps he should have done teshuvah, and the recording of the incident, the need to bring a sin offering, perhaps the study of the sin offering procedures and his teshuvah would have been sufficient that he will not have to bring that sin offering. I personally am not on a level to know which is correct. Continuing to read. From the mitzvahs that are not obligatory, such as reciting Shema Yisrael or Tefillin, these mitzvahs need to be done every day. How can he speak of them as being optional, not obligatory? Here means does not mean that you don't have to do them. Rather, it means that not doing them does not incur serious punishment. This is because the lack of fulfilling positive mitzvot is not as punishable as the transgressions of negative mitzvot. My commentary. With all respect to Rabbi Auerbach, the translator, in my opinion, the word optional as it applies to these mitzvot is correct. In later generations, many of the days of an individual's life is complete as to these mitzvot on those days. Therefore, it is no longer obligatory. This is helpful to explain the idea of the reform movements no longer requiring the laying of tefillin and the like. Please be careful when applying this aspect to your life, since it is easier to perform a mitzvah that is not necessary than to miss a mitzvah that is necessary. Mm-hmm. There are mitzvahs that one need not pursue, such as sending away the mother bird or putting up a parapet on a roof, which is a wall. Not a wall, but a fence on a roof to keep people from falling off, and which he may also have been prevented from completing. However, since he was not told to pursue and fulfill them, though the person will have to reincarnate, he will definitely not sin in the upcoming incarnation. This means to say that he will be protected from heaven in that lifetime, since he only came back to fix something that was never an absolute obligation. However, if the mitzvah did present itself and he did not want to perform it, then he must reincarnate, and in this case, there will be no guarantee that he will not sin. Since the gravity of what he did was greater, the consequences are greater. He must come back without a guarantee of being protected. However, one who actually transgresses and is thereby forced to reincarnate will most definitely sin again. This needs to be understood in stages. The soul is intrinsically a pure, simple light. No matter what bad deeds a person falls into, it does not affect his essence. However, it does taint the external aspects of the soul. This can be compared to a brilliant diamond. Even if it falls into the mud, it still really retains its beauty. The dirt only occupies the surface and prevents the light from shining out. As soon as the dirt is cleansed off, it resumes all of its glory.
Malka?
The world was created for free will. A person must therefore bear the consequences of his actions. If he soiled his soul, he comes back in that state. It is his job and actual claim to fame to cleanse himself. However, he must know that he is not starting with a clean slate, rather from being in the negative. Therefore, he will have certain tendencies to do bad. This is what the Ari means by saying he will sin again. The person must be strong to withstand the tests in that lifetime. I'm adding, remember the stages applies to multiple incarnations, where a sin is made thereby thickening the veil over the light of the mud, stopping the light, whichever metaphor you prefer to use. A person must fulfill all the 613 mitzvot in thought, in word, and in deed. Not only this, but a person must fulfill all of the 613 mitzvot in deed, verbally, and in thought. These are the three garments of the soul. This is from the Tanya. They come from the three triads of the Sefirot. Thought comes from the upper three, the Chabad, Chachma, Bina, and Dat. Speech comes from Chagat, Chesed, Gevura, and Tiferet. Deed comes from Nehi, Nehi, which is Netzach, Hod, and Yesod. You'll notice none of those are malchut. Continuing to read. In order for the connection to be complete, it must be from all of our attributes to all of Hashem's. I am to my beloved, and my beloved is to me. Just as the simple, infinite light expresses to us above to below, through these garments of the Sefirot, so does the simple light of the soul express and connect to Hashem through its counterpart. Flows through its counterpart clothing. Thought, word, and deed below to above. As the sages have said on the verse, this is the law for the burnt offering and the meal offering. Anyone who learns the section of the burnt offering is like one who offered it. They were indicating that a person is obligated to fulfill all 613 mitzvot, verbally, and in thought as well. The simple explanation of this teaching is that even when there is no temple, there is some way that we can, as if to bring the sacrifices. When you learn about something, its root energy above is activated and channeled to the world. How much it is activated depends on how deeply you engage in delving into it. The same applies to meditating. There is even some category that doing something through learning and meditation is actually higher than doing it indeed. The faculty of thought is higher than that of action. Some tzaddikim are so able to be focused in the world of thought that they are able to make the rectification and fulfill their obligation through thought alone. Thus, we found that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was exempt from doing mitzvahs because of his exalted level of meditation and learning. The Ari comes to point out a lesson hidden and hinted in this rabbinical teaching, that there is an obligation to do all the mitzvahs also in thought and speech. If thought and speech were only optional, they would not be powerful enough to fuel a makeshift, winged fulfillment of the mitzvahs when deed is not possible. I'm adding, if deed is possible, it must be done. If deed is done, it is incomplete without word in its proper form, and in thought in its complete form, including the sharing consciousness associated with proaction instead of reaction. A person must learn Torah on four levels. If a person fails to fulfill all 613 mitzvahs, or mitzvot, on all three levels of deed, action, speech, speaking, talk, and thought, then he will have to reincarnate until he does. As well, a person must learn Torah on four levels, alluded to by the word pardes, which stands for peshat, remes, drash, and sod. Simple, hints, allegorical, and secret. He will have to reincarnate until he does. As he explained in chapter 11, that there are four primary levels of interpreting the Torah, the Peshat, the Remes, the Drash, and the Sod. Learning Torah is the foundation root of all of the other mitzvahs. The comparison of the need to fulfill everything in thought, word, and deed to the necessity of learning the entire Torah comes to show that learning corresponds to all of the mitzvot. The depth and breadth of the mind and heart must be connected to Hashem. One does this through learning the whole Torah to its full length and width. I am adding, one cannot know how to do a mitzvah without study. If one does not study a mitzvah on all four levels, one cannot perform a mitzvah correctly on all three levels. This is the end of the section. Are there any questions?
Hello, may I ask a question? In regards to what we read about mitzvahs, do you not think that that Hashem, if you put him in the picture, is he not guiding us in that process to identify when to study, what to study, because you do it intuitively, and then episodes will be brought to your attention that you will be involved in, and sometimes it's afterwards is when you understand if you've completed the mitzvah. Is that possibly what's going on? Because I have found in my own personal life that inviting Hashem in my life to help me unite my mind and my heart together is the key to this whole thing, even though it's not expressed that way in what you have been reading today.
Inviting Hashem in is always a proper thing to do.
Okay.
Yes, Hashem does direct us. Yes, if we are open to hear or see or touch or smell, what's the one I'm on, or speak to Hashem, depending on the level of your connection to Hashem, that motivation and that direction will be heard, will be observed, will be implemented. The unity of the mind and the heart is really the last thing, because that's the meaning, one of the inner meanings of the Ahavta L'Re'acha Kamocha, love your neighbor as yourself. Unless you are able to love your neighbor as yourself, you know that your mind and your heart are not separated. And that is why the Ari in this particular subject matter does not bring it into the discussion. Are there any other questions? We still have time, so if you'll go to the next link on the Advanced Reincarnation, you'll find handout number 26, which starts at section 17, section 1. Chapter 17, section 1. Its title is 600,000 Souls. As we have already said, a person is obligated to learn Torah on all four levels. Now there are only 600,000 souls. The souls all come from the six Sephirot. They correspond to the 6 days and the 6 directions of the world. They all come from the 6 Sephirot. I am adding. The Sephirot is fine, but which world? A Sephirot is always connected to another level, up to 2 levels. So we should be told what the other 2 levels are all about. This also explains the comments below. A soul root is, for example, Netzach of World 1 of Sephirah 5. Then the similar soul root friend is Netzach of World 1, Sephirah 4. We will specify worlds and Sephirah language later in this book, in the Sefer. There are stages in the evolution of the descent of the souls into the world. First, there were the 3 patriarchs. Then there were the 70 souls of the house of Jacob. The 60 myriads of souls come next, and due to the miraculous fertility during the centuries in Egypt. I am adding, for those of you not familiar with the term a myriad, it is 10,000 soldiers. But don't we see a lot more children of Israel than 600,000 roaming the face of the earth? How can there be only 600,000? The answer is that each one is like a grand tree root from which stems out of many branches or souls. Thus, many people in bodies share the same soul root. If you feel especially connected with certain individuals, this is a sign that you share with them a mutual source. And the Torah itself is the source of all the souls of the children of Israel. I've written a comment because the the way the translation is done, it says Jewish souls, but I constantly recommend that you substitute children of Israel for the word Jewish to help keep you from making what I consider a mistake, that the Jewish souls are the only tribes capable of making the particular transformations that are needed. Continuing to read. Therefore, there are 600,000 letters in the Torah, according to the Zohar, and throughout the tradition in the Talmud as well. The place from which they are hewn. Each letter is a source and channel for a soul root to evolve from. The sages view this as if a rock hewn from a mountain. My commentary. Actually, there are only 304,805 letters in the Tanakh, let alone the Torah. How is this teaching of the sages reconciled with our modern computer counting? Let us see from through this essay, and I'm going to, we don't have time to finish that. Well, maybe we do. Let's try. When we'll see where we, how far we get. So I'm going to click on that link and open up the essay that is being referred to. This is one of the most fun essays I ever read and commented upon. There is a traditional teaching from the Talmud that there are 600,000 letters in the Torah. In this computer age, the calculation is truthfully 304,000 plus. How do we reconcile this apparent discrepancy? This discrepancy is actually a very serious issue, although most people shrug it off today. To understand why this is a serious issue, let's read below. In the Talmud, there are many things that are inaccurate according to modern science, although the teachings were accurate at the time of its writing, based on the science of the generation. Some of the things even lead to serious disagreements today. And how do we deal with Jewish teachings from the Talmud as well as potential halachot based on erroneous teachings like spontaneous generation of worms and other such teachings? To explain spontaneous generation, at the time of the writing of the Gemara, the science of the day said worms did not lay eggs. The eggs are too small to be seen with the naked eye, so that the new generation must come from spontaneous generation, since we can see no connection between the older generation and the newer generation. There are certain worms who are considered kosher due to this teaching of spontaneous generation, which in light of science today would be considered non-kosher. This leads to disagreements and great creates separation among groups of Jews, groups of children of Israel. The general teaching is that previous generations are higher spiritually than more current generations. Since they are higher spiritually, their teachings have greater weight and must be followed rather than secular teachings from the world of science. This leads to the ultimate question: do I follow the truth or do I follow custom and falsehood? The Torah teaches us to follow the rabbis. Even if the rabbi is teaching us that left is right and right is left, Yet whenever a teaching of the rabbi is not the truth, according to science or another essence of truth, such as my intuition, it leads to a breakdown in respect for the rabbis, for the rabbi's actual teachings, and ultimately, God forbid, Hashem. This is why the issue is serious. Let's return to the issue of the number of letters in the Torah and discover alternatives to reconcile the discrepancy. One teaching is that for each letter, there is a space. In each space, there is concealed another letter, and therefore there are twice as many letters as physically counted. What is wrong with this teaching? Nothing, except that there is not 304,000 letters in the Chumash, but in the Tanakh. You do know the difference. The Chumash is the five books of Moses. The Tanakh is the 24 books in the Tanakh. It includes the prophets and it includes the writings.
Right.
The 304,000 represents the number of letters in the Tanakh itself, not just in the continuing to read. The teachings from the Talmud that there are 600,000 letters in the Chumash. The authors of this space equals double letter theory reconcile this conflict by stating that the teaching meant to say the Torah, which includes all that is in the Tanakh, and did not mean to say the Chumash only, even though that is the word that is used. Here are two links supporting an alternative teaching. It also has discrepancies and potential conflicts, as we will discover. Click on the first link and we will read together. Some reason. My computer's a little slow opening up, so I hope I don't get. I'm still trying to see if it'll open up.
Mine just now opened, so it just may be taking time.
Yeah, it's a slow website. I'm familiar with it. And I know you are on as well. The Kabbalah Secrets, I know you get that email.
Right.
I'm giving it one more chance. mine didn't open up. So I'm going to call the class for this evening, and I will solve this problem for next week.
Okay.
And we will pick up at this point. We will read the tidbit. We'll also read the second link as well. Does anybody have any questions up till now? I both hope you all have a wonderful week, Shavuot Tov, and remind you that we will be counting the Omer at 7 p.m. Pacific time tonight, and that tomorrow we will have two classes, one at 4:30, which is a deeper Zohar class on Noah, and at 7 p.m. tomorrow, Monday, we will continue our teachings of the Share Kedusha. Shalom to all. Have a beautiful evening.
Toda. Thank you.
Shalom. Okay.